Anywho, I'm going to read a chapter out of the book that's coming out in October entitled The January Dancer, the cover art for which appears here on my desktop, which is really cool. Okay.
Sci-fi essentials.
Yeah, that means the Sci-Fi Channel says it's a book you gotta read.
Absolutely.
Now, I'm going to break with tradition and read a chapter from somewhere later in the book. Because I got an hour according to that schedule. Whether you have an hour, I don't know, but I got an hour. And we shall try to finish through the chapter. It's reasonably self-contained. An earlier chapter, for those of you who subscribe to Analog Magazine, is in the current issue of Analog. So why should I read that when you could buy Analog and read it? The gist of things that have happened up till now, what you have to know in order for this chapter to make sense, it almost stands alone, but the January Dancer is a pre-human artifact, which if you think about the Maltese Falcon, a lot of people want to get their hands on it for various reasons. The main character in this chapter is Bridget Bond, who is a hound of the Ardrí. Ardrí, if you know any Gaelic, comes from Ard Righ, which is the High King of Ireland, and the spiral arm has, for some inexplicable reason, become Irish, or at least the political class is Irish, which is not so hard to understand, actually. The stars are connected by superluminal highways, creases in space-time where you don't exceed the speed of light, but in the crease, the speed of light is much higher. Or to put it another way, the speed of space is higher. And so you can get from star to star within a few weeks' journey. And what else do you need to know? To be a hound of the High King, a member of the kennel, as they're called, or the particular service, as they are officially known. Hounds can be anything and many things. They can be a planetary manager or a guerrilla leader. They can be, they can fight with words or with weapons, although weapons are actually counted. Words are counted as among their weapons. Bridget Bond is one of these. There are others that appear from time to time during the story. Grimpen, for example, and Wilkie. Okay, the other conceit is that the whole story is being told by a man in a bar to a harper who plays the clairshach, the Irish harp. And she has come to learn the story of the dancer and has heard that he knew the people who were involved. And he says, well, that was a long time ago. Didn't think anybody knew. Eventually he decides, well, who can it hurt? So he tells the story. So, Bridget Bond, the scarred man says, arrived at Peacock Junction, a world of lush colors and bubbling waters and of careless men and women. There the tropics run from pole to pole, and the ocean currents are delightfully warm and languid. It is a world in which not much happens, and what does happen, happens slowly. They have a shannon of sort, the garrulous old men and women who meet in an open amphitheater during the dry season and not at all during the rains. Someday they may pass a law, but there is no hurry. The universe is in motion, planets and stars spinning, galaxies swirling, starships sliding from star to star along superluminal channels in the fabric of space. There is no reason why any world in such a universe should be so much at rest as Peacock Junction. But while Peacock has very few laws, she is rich in customs, and customs have the greater force. A law may be appealed, but from custom there is no recourse. When Billy Kisselwando killed his partner in a drunken fit, he was given 100 days grace. He set off into the Malawayo wilderness with a rucksack, a hiking staff, and a small but faithful terrier. He emerged after 99 days, minus dog and staff, and reported to the district head, confessed his sin, and prayed forgiveness from his partners Manu. And ever afterwards he repeated his confession in the Hall of Remonstration to all who came to see him. Such is the cruelty of custom. Compared to the great roundabout of superluminal highways that converge on the worlds of Jehovah, Peacock barely deserves the name of junction. Route 66 splits off from the Silk Road and hies off toward Forganger and Valency, but that is all. In the early days of settlement, it was thought that proximity to the Blue Giant at Sapphire Point would endow Peacock with a great many roads, and much effort was spent on the survey of its approaches. But the tenor of scientific thought now runs in the other direction. And a good thing, too, for nothing tempts the highwaymen of the Spiral Arm more than a sun with plentiful roads. Shaman Narrow's spaceport was the primary STC repository for Peacock Roads, and so it was to this Grassel Ironstone Tower that Bridget Bond came on the trail of the Phantom Fleet. The tower was inlaid with gold and decorated with pastel murals of peacock scenery and of those few cockers who had ever faced anything requiring heroism. On the building's western facade, a bulbous extrusion eyed a distant polychrome mountain and the tea plantations that tiled her slopes. There, trace elements in the soils and the artifice of bioneering gave the tea fields sundry colors and the mountain its name. Despite the building's importance, there was no security screen at the entrance. Bridget Bond was not surprised. It was of a piece with this lackadaisical world. But after she had passed through and was standing before the lift tubes in the great multi-storied atrium, she gave the matter a second thought. Indolent need not mean stupid. Indeed, indolence often required considerable ingenuity. So she returned to the vestibule and studied its walls with greater care and discovered, amid the wild swirls and colors with which the cockers embellished any flat surface, the lenticels and digitizers of various sensors. She nodded her approval at one camera eye, her opinion of the cockers rising by a notch. Kanmi Pulaweo was not in the director's office when, thanks to typically vague directions from staff, Bridget Bunn had finally located it. The room did not strike her as very official. Offices ought to appear functional, with desks, storage drives, comm units, hard copy files, and the like. They ought, in fact, to have walls. They ought not have a whispering waterfall and a glade guarded by colorful parrots and sweet larks. A parrot is not a receptionist, and a hammock is not an office chair. So where, she asked one green and yellow bird, is your master? The parrot shuffled a bit on its perch, cocked its head, and squawked, "What of you? Look at a view." Bridget Bond snorted, turned away, then wondered if there was something more serious under this frivolous facade. The cockers were famous across the Spiral Arm for their bioneering. Perhaps the parrot was a receptionist after all. Yet there was nothing about the bird that suggested it was anything more than a bird. The skull was not of an encouraging volume, its attention span fleeting. It glanced at the intruder repeatedly, but that would be expected of any half-wild beast. Its exclamation was probably no more than a trained reflex. But why train a bird to make that response to that question?